welcome to another edition of Running Flat Radio. I'm Chris Uzinski. I'm the race director at Running Flat. And, you know, as we kind of resurrect Running Flat Radio, which has kind of been in hiatus for about 3 years, we're revisiting with a whole bunch of really old friends of ours. Dean Karnazes is coming on in a couple of weeks. You know, every time he puts a book out, we have him on the show, and he's always an interesting guest. And our guest this week, too, is always fabulous. I think this is Dave's third appearance on the show. Dave McGillery from the Boston Marathon joins us as well today. And we'll have Dave on in a couple minutes. But just before that, I just want to remind everyone that, you know, Running Flat is producing the Canada Day race this year. And the Canada Day race is totally virtual. Look, we tried last year to put it on, and as we came to around this time, we said we're gonna cancel the entire race because there's tons of problems with the mailing systems, not just in the United States, around Canada, but around the world. We have, you know, backlogs, and it was just a disaster out there. So this year, we're confident that, you know, the mailing systems have all been kind of fixed, and we've gone 100% virtual for the simple fact that we don't know what is going to be happening in the province of Ontario or Southern Ontario on July 1st. No one can tell you that. And so it's 100% virtual. And this year, you know, our medals are very famous, right? The runners actually get to choose who goes on the medal. This year, we made the choice, and it'll be nurses, and it'll also be healthcare providers. That's who celebrates as a stethoscope on the Canada Day medal. The medal's the same medal for the last 9 years, same architecture. But every year we just kind of change what goes inside of it. And, you know, we've had, you know, some famous Canadians like Chris Hadfield. Commander Chris Hadfield's been on it. Don Cherry, Wayne Gretzky, Sir John A. Macdonald, our founding prime minister. So this year it's the nurses, and we have people literally from all over the world who've been registering for this race, and thankfully for that as well. And thank you for your support. So I got to tell you, you know, Dave is... Dave McGillery is a real anomaly in our industry, and he's really not just only kind of like a pioneer in the business, but he's also really our statesman in the business. I mean, he's had, it's got to be over 1,200 races that he's produced with his company. He's been a lifelong runner. He's run across the United States. I don't know how many times it's really, has it been three times, Dave, you ran across the United States?
And once up the East Coast.
Okay. And you know, so welcome back to Running Flat Radio. It's so great to see you. I mean, we haven't seen each other in a number of years because I haven't been to Running USA in at least two, maybe three years now.
Yeah. So first of all, before we begin, I have a question for you, Chris.
Okay.
Where did the name Running Flat Radio come from?
Sure.
I just don't know. Maybe your listening audience knows this, but I don't. I find it intriguing.
Yeah, absolutely. So Running Flat comes from this. I started a marathon in my hometown of Amherstburg, Ontario, which is between Lake Erie and the Detroit River, right across from Detroit. And it's very, very, very flat. So, and it was a Boston qualifier. And this course literally changed elevations 65 feet over 42K. It was one of the flattest courses in the world. And I used to tell people, hey, come run with us. You can watch your dog run away for 3 days out here. It's so flat. And that's where Running Flat, and that's where Running Flat came from. Honest to God, it's a true story. So,
Everything has a beginning. So I was just wondering where this beginning was.
Yeah, like 16 years ago. You know, I've been at this for 17 years. There's not very many of us who are full time race directors. In Canada, you know, it's a little more than a couple handfuls. In the United States, what's your guess? Maybe 350, 400.
Yeah, I mean, similarly, not at least as far as owning their own business, and that's what they do for a living. There is a lot of race directors, obviously, in the country working for other entities, nonprofits, or what have you. But they're like you say, there's only, relatively speaking, a handful of business owners that produce mass participatory events for a living.
Right. And I gotta, and with all due respect, we're all hurting right across the board, right around North America as businesses. And it's not just us. It's also the charities that we support and raise, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars for every year. It's also all of our suppliers, right? I mean, the guys who do the banners and the shirts and the medals and the bibs and the timing companies. And there's a whole host of great suppliers that make us look amazing on race day. And they too are also haven't been faring well. We've all been trying to kind of switch and look at different things for the last year, but the reality is, you know, no one can wait for racing to come back full time.
Exactly. And here in Massachusetts, where I'm from, you know, basically we were part of what was called phase four, which is almost herd immunity, full vaccination for the last, you know, 12 to 16 months. And I've been lobbying with the State House to sort of re-categorize us because we're outdoors, we're healthy, we're fit, where we know how to mitigate and can spread things out. Give us a chance. We are a business, and as you said, Chris, our business impacts so many others beyond just us. Everything from, you know, the nonprofit sector, philanthropy, economic impact to, you know, the municipality within which we conduct our events, to all the vendors, and the list goes on and on and on. So, the governor of Massachusetts just had a press conference 2 days ago and announced that road races will be allowed to reopen as of May 10th. Not exactly sure what reopen means and what all the conditions might come with it in terms of restrictions, limitations, mitigation, and all that, but at least it's going in the right direction for us.
Yeah, you know, so Ontario's in a full lockdown. We've actually got stay-at-home orders now. It's been going on 6 weeks is the order, and we're about halfway through it, a little more than halfway through it. And I got to tell you, you know, just before the lockdown happened, you know, I wrote a brief article about how I think this is the year of the charity race, the community race, those 65 to 200 person races that are on trails, that are, you know, in parks. And it's those races that, you know, have really got to put their best foot forward coming out of this, because they also represent us. And, you know, they need to have, you know, good announcing, and they need to have good production, and they need to have, you know, a course that's measured. And they need to be able to help themselves, because most of them are charities, and raise a ton of cash, because there's a lot of pent up demand out there. And you know, this is kind of what I'm trying to coach all these charities to go along and do this. So when we do finally lift that stay at home order, that we can probably get about 100 people out in a gathering, and then maybe 150, then maybe 250 as we kind of tier out to, you know, whatever herd immunity or whatever normal looks like coming out of this later in the summer.
Yeah. And I think every business is different. When I started out 40 years ago, every event that I managed, I owned, because I created it, because there really weren't many, if any, events of any significance other than something like the Boston Marathon or something similar to that, but a handful. So if I wanted to have a business that produces you know, road races or triathlons or charity walks, I had to conceptualize those and then, you know, market and promote them and then execute them. And so I owned them all, you know, anywhere between 10 to 25 a year. But after about 15 years of doing that, I just realized what my skill set was and what my skill set wasn't. And it was more operations, logistics, management than it was marketing and promotion. So I went in that direction, and more events started happening, and most were being conducted for nonprofits. And so I went to the nonprofits and said, listen, your your skill set is raising funds, not necessarily producing events. Mine's producing events. If we partner, you know, let me do the logistics, you do the fundraising, right, and it's a win-win. And that's how my business ultimately took off. So as we, but now it's backfired a little bit on me because all the events that I manage now, I don't own any of them. We manage 35 events, DMSC Sports, 35 events a year. I don't own any of them, but they're all very significant in size. They're in the 3,000, 5,000, 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 range. So even though these smaller events, as you just detailed, are coming back, there's not much of a role for my company for those events because we're more sort of tooled to manage the bigger ones. So I'm trying to push for the larger races to come back sooner than later because that's the world I currently live in.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And because regionally around the United States, like Texas, Florida, the Carolinas, you know, they like opened up automatically and just said, hey, you know, we're all open. Let's all go at it. And, you know, here in Ontario, we're looking at that going like, wait a minute. You know, now there's a climate thing between Ontario and Florida and California and everywhere else, right? In the southern United States. So I can understand, you know, being outside more, less transmission outside. You know, it's kind of like the flu season, right? The flu season takes off in the fall and disappears in the spring because we're all indoors in those months. You know, especially in Boston and as you would in Detroit. So I get that. But, you know, like here, we have such a difficult time getting that coordination between local health authorities, the provincial health unit itself, and then, you know, the province, you know, making decisions. So, you know, as a race director, you know, who has a number of races, you literally just got to go, okay, you know we're insignificant in the grand scheme of things. We're a run. You know, we're really in endurance entertainment and fitness, whereas, you know, real people are dying here. And so we get that. So we don't usually make a stink and we don't really talk about it too much, but it's always great to at least be able to talk to another race director who's in a totally different region in the United States trying to figure these things out because like we're all pulling our hair out.
You know, you make so many very significant points just in your last few comments, Chris. You know, at the beginning of 2020, when the pandemic hit, you know, I always felt that this industry was bulletproof. You know, nothing was going to bring us to our knees.
Right. You're
because
so right.
People were doing this in good times and they were doing this in not so good of times. People turned to themselves. And, you know, when I started to become a race director, people would ask me what I did for a living. And I told them I'm a race director. And they said, you're a what?
Yeah.
I said, a race director. And they're like, what the heck do they do? Chalk mark in the road, yell go. And now when people ask me, what do I do for a living? I say, I help raise the level of self-esteem and self-confidence of tens of thousands of people in America and all over the world, frankly. And that's what we do.
Yeah.
That's exactly what we do. So it isn't just a road race anymore. It's something very, very different. And I always say to people, you know what the toughest part about running a race is? And they say, what? I said, is signing the application. It's making the commitment, having the courage and the guts to make the commitment. But then you have to earn the right to do it. You can't do it on a barroom bet. You have to earn the right, do the work, do the homework. And then you toe the line, you answer the gun, you run the course, you cross the finish line, you get a medal, and then magic happens.
Yeah.
You go home feeling good about yourself. And there's nothing more powerful in this world than feeling good about yourself, because that's the very foundation by which we accomplish everything in our lives. And that's why I think our industry is so important, even though, you know, others may think otherwise. Oh, it's only a road race. In the world I live in, it's much, much more than a road race. So as these things were going over the cliff, I was like full of self-pity. And I was going, hey, you know, I'm losing my business. Everyone else around me is losing business. But then I just said, hey, you know, quit being so selfish. People are dying. People are hurting.
Yep.
They're getting sick. You know, put your big boy pants on and figure it out. And so I just started trying to think about what are my assets?
Yeah.
What are my skill sets? And are they transferable? And so we did what everyone has been doing in the last 16 months. We pivoted and we started taking our assets and using them in a different way. And what I mean is we started doing outdoor drive-in movies. We started renting our road race equipment to restaurants for outdoor dining. Yep. We started renting our equipment for outdoor graduations and for COVID testing sites. And we kept a pulse. Instead of hibernating or closing our business down, yep, we figured out a different path, a different way. But then the winter came and it all, yeah, all fell apart, yeah, and went away.
Sure.
You know, and lucky for me, then I got a call from this company called CIC Health, who was commissioned by the Commonwealth of Massachusetts to stand up a mass vaccination sites here in the state of Massachusetts. So they asked us, they said, well, will you partner with us? I said, well, I don't know anything about vaccination. They said, yeah, but you are logisticians.
Yep.
I said, what the heck is a logistician? I've never been called a logistician before. Well, you're the operations guy. You know how to move people. I said, no, you're right. He says, well, we need those type of people. I said, sign me up. So we stood up Gillette Stadium, Fenway Park, and just recently the Heinz Convention Center in Boston. And what's so interesting, Chris, about that is that last weekend would have been the Boston Marathon in April. Well, instead of giving out 30,000 race numbers, we were giving out thousands and thousands of vaccine shots.
Nice.
With the hope of coming back in October when we've rescheduled the race and being able to hand out race numbers again. So we've been able to figure out a way to help keep people alive, keep people healthy, and have a significant impact on our own industry and helping to bring it back.
Yeah, and we did exactly the same thing as well. Because we own our own barricade, we own our own timing system. We became a real self-sufficient kind of organization because the nearest timing company would be Toronto to bring them down 4 hours away to do a race. So we said, you know what, we'll make the investment. We'll train our own people. So we became this literally like a race kit company, right? Like we had everything.
Yeah.
So what ended up happening was we ended up helping restaurants here locally expand their footprint outside when they couldn't put people inside so they can have a profitable summer. We did everything we possibly could. Still couldn't do anything with the timing equipment, by the way. But but that's just the way it goes, right? You do what you have to do to survive. And looks like there is light at the end of the tunnel. It looks like it may be staged depending on where you are in North America, you know, what's normal and what's not normal. But we're really looking forward to it. And there's a lot of pent-up demand, I think, for organized events, organized running events, hell, even just going out with your friends to a run. I mean, oh my gosh, can you imagine doing that again? You know, and running with your friends. So just to quickly talk about it, since we are talking about running and running events, this year Boston has a big anniversary and doing a whole bunch of different things.
Yeah. So with last year, who would ever believe that we would ever cancel the Boston Marathon?
Right.
But we did. But we went virtual and we basically counted it as the 124th running. And so this year, then it would be the 125th. And until just a few days ago, we weren't 100% sure that we would actually get permission to conduct the event, even though we had announced the date and announced the field size. We did with the caveat that this is only based on getting permission to conduct the event. And just a few days ago, that pretty much happened. So we're in full swing right now organizing the 125th in-person Boston Marathon. In addition to that, it's the hybrid event weekend because we're also conducting a virtual too for anybody who ever wanted to, you know, participate in the Boston Marathon from around the world. We have a virtual Boston Marathon fill size limit of 70,000. I think we're close to halfway there already or whatever. So there's a lot of people around the world who, even though they can't be here in person, they're still going to be able to feel a little bit associated with the Boston Marathon by being able to run virtually the marathon and then get a marathon medal and shirt and all the swag and all that. So, you know, the whole idea is to make lemonade out of lemons, is to pivot a little bit and make the best out of what hand you've been dealt. And so, but now we're working on this whole, how do we do this concept, right? Because it's almost like starting all over again. you know, with mitigation strategy? Do you require testing? Do you require vaccination? Where's the evidence of that? What about keeping people distant from each other? So we're going to do a rolling start at the beginning instead of everyone in right. sort of packed together like normally. We'll bring them out in waves and based on ability level, drop them off and off they go. So it'll be the most unique Boston Marathon in the history, the 125 years, the way this thing is conducted. But we just, number one, obviously, objective is to keep everyone safe. And so by doing it this way, that'll accomplish that, but it'll definitely feel and look very, very different.
So even from the last time you actually did a Boston Marathon, which would have been 2019, correct? Mm-hmm. Everything is going to change. Your water stations are going to change. Your race kit pickup is going to change. Everything you yes. do has changed.
Yes, pretty much everything.
Every contact point has changed.
We have to, as they say, we have to reimagine the event. But hopefully just for this 1 year, we could have taken another mulligan, taken a pass, not gone through all this challenge and, you know, labor intensity to pull off, you know, an in-person event. But, you know, we already missed 1 year. We didn't want to miss two in a row. We want to keep an engagement with our participants. So we're making that effort, and I'm sure it'll go fine. But you know, people are going to have to be patient and understand that what if they did the race in the past, don't expect to happen this year what has happened in the last 20 years if you've done it that many times, because it's just going to be very different.
And be patient, please. Please be patient. And understand.
That's the key.
Don't give the RD and his staff more gray hair, please. So
there you go.
Just an example of that. I know in the World Athletics, the early guidelines that came out from those guys about getting back into running, they talked about kind of touchless water stations where, you know, the volunteers weren't touching the water, but you were going to maybe give a bottle of water out. And like, there's a whole bunch of, you know, different imaginations of what that looks like. What does that look like to you with how many participants? Sorry, have you got
20,000.
Okay, so you've limited it to 20. And by the way, isn't this the world's largest race now that you've got the 70 plus the 20? Doesn't this?
Well, one, I don't know what's going to happen in London or Chicago or whatever. So that remains to be seen whether this will end up being the, if you combine the virtual with the in-person, whether these totals will add up to more than anyone has ever experienced in the past. But it's going to be close, if not right there.
Oh yeah, running is running. Right? Absolutely.
Yeah. So all the different areas you touch upon, whether it's the hydration stations along the course, whether it's the rolling start at the start, whether it's transportation from the finish to the start, whether it's once you cross the finish line, what happens then? Do you give them a brown bag with a bagel and a banana in it and say, see you later, goodbye? All that's being worked on now. We still have 6 months to go. And the reason why we don't want to set our plans in stone right now is because, as everyone knows, it's an ever-changing environment. And things could look very, very differently 6 months from now than what they do now. So we don't want to put all these limitations and restrictions and all these different ways of doing business and commit to all of that right now when – and just in a few short months, things could change significantly, whether it be to the better or to the worse. We don't know.
Right.
So we're working on like plan A, B, and C, so that once we get closer, we know which one to pull out of the top drawer. And whether it's touchless hydration stations where runners have to bring their own water bottle, and when they get to a station, they have to just quickly fill the bottle and move on. And so there's no interaction with volunteers. There's no handing of cups. All these things are being discussed and considered, but But no decisions have been made this early yet.
Yeah, and what's interesting too that people have to understand is so Dave and the folks running the Boston Marathon have, you know, their plan A, B, C, probably all the way through M of different situations that might happen and how they change. So do, what are you like, are you, is it seven municipalities you run through?
Eight, yeah.
So do the eight municipalities, and they may all not, they all may not sync up. And so does DHS, so does the FBI, so does the each policing organization you run through too.
Yeah.
So all of these things have got to somehow connect and work together as they approach this day with 20,000 people appearing to do a race. I mean, it's like changing the wheels on a Greyhound going down the 401.
No, your point's well taken, and I appreciate, you know, the sensitivity to that, because on the outside looking in, most people don't recognize that. But with Boston, and number one, it is a point to point. Whoever designed this course, if I find them, I'm going to wring their neck. I'm only kidding. That was 125. The person would be pretty old by now. But point to points are brutal, as you know, in terms of managing them, because they involve so much more effort than if it was an out and back loop or whatever. So you have that dynamic, and then you have, just all the different, you know, moving parts. You know, for us, it's eight cities in town. So just because one says yes to a change doesn't mean the next one down the road is going to say yes. So if they say no, now you've got a hole in your course, right? So it's a painstaking process to go one by one by one. And we have.
Yeah.
And we always do. And I mean, listen, we've been doing this for a long time. So they're incredibly cooperative. They understand the challenge that we're up against. They bend over backwards. This is as good for them as it is for us to have the race run through their community. Yeah, there's some inconvenience and there's some impact. But at the end of the day, the benefits far outweigh the downside to any of this. So we're very, very lucky that, that we have that level of cooperation. It's funny, when I put on races in other parts of the state or whatever, they're like, oh, here he comes again. You know, it's like, you're going to shut down our roads again. Oh boy. You know, and so I've always said the most important ingredient to a successful event, bar none, in my opinion, is community support.
Yeah.
It's the support of the community, again, within which you conduct your event. Because if somehow you get the permit, but the community doesn't want you there,
right,
it's not fun anymore, right? So you got to have the politicians and the corporate entities and the citizens and public safety and the medical community. They all have to buy into it. And, for us, we obviously have all of that.
Yeah. I always tell my staff and guys and volunteers that it's a privilege for us to receive the roads that we get from the community that we're in working. Because, for them to close these roads down and inconvenience neighbors or churches and everything else, because most of us do our work on a Sunday morning, it's a real privilege. And it's never to be taken lightly, ever. And that's why we go back and we clean the course. You know, we make sure we leave it better, cleaner than when we received it.
Well, it's funny you say that, because I have this line when people say to me all the time, boy, 30,000 people, 1,200 members of the media, you're standing in front of them before the gun fires. That must be a lot of pressure. And my response is, yeah, but pressure is a privilege. Because it's a privilege to be in this position. As long as you're prepared, you know, and if you you're not prepared for anything, if you're not prepared for everything. So as long as you've done the work and earned the right to be there, there's no pressure in that sense of the word, because it's more of a privilege than it is a degree of pressure. So I agree with you.
Yeah. You know, and just as a personal note, I've had a hard time over the last number of years health-wise, and I think most of it kind of deals with stress and the stress of being a race director, which has its moments for sure. Whether it's, you know, someone running through a barricade just as you're ready to start the gun off, you know, and now all of a sudden the police are calling and there's a chase going on your course. And I mean, I've had a lot. I mean, just as you've got a million stories, I mean, I've had a lot. Like I was telling somebody the other day, I said, I've almost died three times at races, you know, but, you know, and none of them were my fault or our guys' faults, you know, so, it just happens, but you know, it's been, I'm so uneasy as a race director at my own races, and I'm not happy until the last person crosses the finish line. And I know it sounds really strange, but, and you know, and people may look at me like, oh, he looks mad. I'm not mad. I'm just so driven that all I want to do is have this over with to get everyone safely home to their loved ones.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear about I had to get an ambulance or I had to do a medevac or anything like that. It almost eats me up, you know, because it's a chance thing, right? It's a law of numbers. And it's something built into my personality that kind of drives me to go, you know what? I just want everyone to go home in one piece to their loved ones and say they had a great time.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, when the numbers were a lot smaller versus what they are now, and to your point about statistically,
right,
you know, you might end up having some people, you know, have some problems. If you have 30,000 people, not everyone's going to walk away, you know, unscathed. And so I have this cliche, I call it pillow talk, not with my wife, but with my pillow. And every time I get up in the morning before a major race, I talk to my pillow and I just say, when I come back after this event's over, I'm going to have a lot of stories to tell you. Mm-hmm. And I'm hopeful that they're all positive. And I used to worry about things like, you know, people going off course or running out of water, which I still do. But right now, it's a different world. And now all I want is for no one to get hurt, you know, just fire the gun, 30,000 people go down the road. At the end of the day, they're all going home. Yep. When that happens, there could be other problems and I'm not happy about it, but I take a big sigh of relief when I put my head back on that pillow at night, know that we got through this without any major issues.
Yeah.
So, I agree with you again.
Yeah. Another real quick question. I love catching up with you. In regards to hydration, because you're traditionally a spring event, so people traditionally would have trained all winter long under different hydration concerns, and then all of a sudden, Boston can get really hot. Right, you could have a warm race one year, and then your hydration numbers just skyrocket, and you got to plan for it. So, is it different now that everyone's training all summer long and then going to do a fall event?
You know, it was interesting. We were having some committee meetings and there was some discussion about, you know, maybe pulling back. We have water stations every mile.
Yep.
And there was some discussion about pulling back to every other mile in the early stages of the race and then every mile on the back end. And I just questioned some of the folks and I just said, well, why would we do that? And they said, well, just to minimize touch points and because of COVID and all that kind of stuff. I said, listen, it's only water. Yep. It's only water. And guess what? That is pretty much the only thing we give these people along the course is water. I mean, hydration. And that's pretty much all they truly need to get from point A to point B. So why would we eliminate, you know, these stations when, you know, this is exactly what they need to get through the course? To your point, we've talked about the fact that now they've got the summer to train through. So if that October day is higher temperatures than normal, hopefully they're more acclimated,
conditioned
to those temperatures and less prone to heat heat stroke in the fall than they would have been in the spring. Mm-hmm. So again, good observation. And, you know, it's on our radar as to how best to deal with it, but it's actually works in our favor more than a spring event.
Correct. It should. Well, theoretically, it should. Yeah. And I'm with you. We've always set up courses at every 2 kilometers that there is a water station. And for us, my vision was it was more of a rhythmic thing, that it was a cadence. Yeah. That you knew, hey, every 2K, right. I would have a water station and never have to worry about it. All I have to concentrate on is the race.
That's it.
And that's the way I've always approached my hydration stations. Anyway, you know what? Every year, our show, we try to explore different medical issues. We have a number of episodes that deal with cardiac issues. We have also a number of shows that deal with asthma, because I suffer from asthma. And running with asthma, and how do you deal with asthma, and all that stuff. Matter of fact, we just did an episode last week on asthma, an update. And, you know, I would not be doing our listeners a service or myself if I wouldn't just find out, how are you feeling? Because you've had some cardiac issues, and you're the one who famously kind of coined the phrase on this show about putting bad gas into a Ferrari.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm doing fine. So I was diagnosed with coronary artery disease back in 2013. The year of the bombing. That wasn't my favorite year.
I guess.
And anyways, so I changed a lot regarding my diet and my lifestyle. In as much as I've always been an athlete my whole life, it's not like I haven't broken some rules, whether it be nutritional rules, or I always thought sleep was overrated, so I wasn't getting enough sleep or rest. I wanted to get the most out of every day. You know, there was a lot of stress, self-imposed. So I said, I got to change things up a little bit. And I did. And I was able to reverse my own coronary artery disease by over 40%. And I went back to Hawaii, did the Ironman, and felt really good. And then I went and I did the World Marathon Challenge, which is 7 marathons, 7 days, 7 continents. And I did that and felt good. But then about a month after that event, I could feel my discomfort again and went and got checked again. And they said, you know, you have 95% blockage in your main artery. And so I had to go through open heart triple bypass surgery. And before the surgery, I said to my heart surgeon, you know, this little jogathon in Boston in April, I've shuffled through it a few times. It's 6 months from now. If I have the surgery now, what do you think? And he gave me the best possible answer. He didn't say, no, I don't think you should do it, or yes, I think you should. He said, I'd be extremely disappointed if you couldn't do it.
No.
And it gave me that four-letter word that we all are searching for right now during this pandemic, and that is hope. He gave me hope that I could have this surgery and still continue to run and run the Boston Marathon like I have for the last 47 years. So I had the surgery and I did what I was supposed to do to recover. And I was recovering and training and recovering, and it was a delicate balance. And I went and did my 47th consecutive Boston Marathon. And, you know, pretty much since then, I've been feeling pretty good. I don't have the breathing difficulty that I had prior to the surgery. I'm still a little sore from the surgery 2 years later, believe it or not. I can still feel it.
Oh.
But that's the surgery. That's not the illness. So my illness is effectively gone. It's just a little soreness remains from the surgery.
Yeah. And I know last time you were on, we talked about the initial diagnosis, that you've changed your diet dramatically, lost some more weight. And did you stick with that, or did you kind of fall off and then this occurred, or how did that look?
No, I stuck with it.
Okay.
I'm a pretty disciplined guy. When sure. I sort of commit to something, I do it. It's genetics, okay. Unfortunately. You can't run away from your genes. And for me, it was probably a little bit of a combination of both, and they just hit a critical mass. But so then I controlled what I could control, but you know, what I couldn't, you know, eventually kind of got me. And I had to take, you know, invasive action and have the surgery done. It doesn't mean I'm totally out of the woods, because I still have, you know, that genetics. And I could, you know, down the road, you know, it could resurface again. I don't know. But no, I have continued to follow the rules and eat properly and whatnot. And, you know, like I said, I've got some goals. You know, I'm still running my age on my birthday. I'm still running Boston. I still like to do one more Ironman. I've got some more goals that I want to pursue down the road. And lucky enough, I'm healthy.
And that is, so people know, Dave runs his birthday in miles every year on his birthday.
Yeah. Yeah. So I started that when I was 12.
It was easier back then.
Possessed me, but it was circumstantial, because I ran 6 miles in the morning around a pond near my house. And then later on at night, I had nothing to do and I did it again. So, you know, I ran 12 miles on my 12th birthday. I thought that was pretty cool. And that started a tradition, which I'm not saying I regret, but it exponentially gets more difficult as the aging process sets in and the amount of miles you got to run increases.
Right.
But it's a fun goal to have. And, you know, I turned 67 in August, so that's what I'm facing. And literally, that's literally what I'm training for right now, is my birthday run in August.
There you go. Real quickly, you're at a high level of endurance for your age. There's not a lot of guys who are in their 60s who are, you know, who can run 67 miles on their birthday. Lots of people listen to this show usually as an audio podcast when they go out for a run, or they're on the treadmill, or they're working out. So could you maybe tell us what some of those symptoms were initially that you were feeling? Were you getting tired earlier?
Yeah.
You know, like what were some of those things that maybe we can look at in our own lives?
Yeah. What was interesting about it is, you know, I would go out for a run and I could feel some discomfort like in my chest, and I was having difficulty actually breathing. And so I'd run and have to walk. I have to walk, and I hate walking. I'm not a walker. I'm a runner. But I had no choice. I had to walk to catch my breath. And I'm saying, and I'm doing pedestrian pace, you know, so I'm not out there sprinting. I'm saying something's wrong here. So then I went in and got tested, and they did echocardiogram, stress tests, EKGs, all kinds of tests. And the doctors all said the same thing. There's nothing wrong with you. I said, yes, there is. I can't breathe when I'm running. I said, you got to give me the big boy tests, right? You got to look under the hood. And so they did a CAT scan and then an angiogram. And the cath doctor comes in and he goes, there, 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 and there. I said, there what? And he said, there you have coronary artery disease. And I was like, nah, you're looking at someone else's film strip. That can't be me. He says, no, that's you. And, you know, it was funny. My first reaction to the doctor was, zip it up. He said, what? I said, don't tell anyone. He said, why? I said, because it's like a ding in my armor.
Yeah.
You know, I'm supposed to be this example of this guy who's out running all the time and doing triathlons and ran across the country and all this other stuff. And I'm supposed to be a specimen of health. And now I have coronary artery disease. I don't want anyone to know that. Well, it kind of leaked out and get out there. And then I started getting these emails from runners all over the country saying that they heard about my illness and they had the same, you know, sort of feelings. And so initially they just dismissed them. But then they said, well, if this can happen to him, it can happen to me. And I went and I got checked and I walked out of the hospital with 3 stents, and you saved my life. And I thought, well, I didn't save your life. You saved your own, because you took action. But I get it. I said, you little son of a gun, quit being so selfish. And maybe there's a lesson here. And the lesson is, just because you're fit doesn't mean you're healthy. And I always thought it did. And a lot of us runners, we think we're invincible.
Yep.
That nothing's going to get us down, that there's no kryptonite in our lives, and nothing can be further from the truth. And so my whole public campaign now is about awareness. And in Massachusetts, there's a public safety campaign that says, if you see something, say something. My campaign is, if you feel something, say something. That we have to advocate for ourselves because there's nobody else. You know, so if you want to be macho and just, you know, try to punch through something that's really should be addressed, then you may not make it home.
Yeah.
And I have seven friends of mine who were, you know, world-class runners who went out for a run one day and never came home. Now, whether they were in denial or whether they, I don't know, but at least I got a second chance. I did something about it. And now I'm, you know, effectively I'm fixed.
Yeah.
So I just think that sometimes the most vulnerable people on the planet can be the most fit people.
Yeah.
And so you just have to be aware of your own body.
Yeah. And also just to note, when we talk about people dying at marathons and running events, because inevitably it happens and it makes the front page saying man dies in marathon. You know, the truth is these are 99.9% undiagnosed heart conditions that the person didn't know about and no one else knew about. And right. That's why it's so important if you're out there running or if you're starting your running season, make sure you go to your cardiologist, go for the tests, do the stress test, do the EKG, do all that. Do it not for yourself, but your family, but do it for, you know, everyone involved.
You know, it's funny, Chris, every year, what do we have to do with our automobiles?
Mm.
We have to bring them in to have an inspection to make sure it's okay.
You have to take the snow tires off, don't you?
But we don't do it for our own body.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. But, you know, and so, and literally every year as a birthday present to myself, I make my next physical checkup appointment.
Yeah.
That's my present to myself, is make my next physical within the next month to go get my annual physical. And every birthday, that's what I do.
My friend, it is always so great to catch up with you. One of these days, I'd love to make it down to Boston too and give you a hand. One of these days. The border's not even open, for God's sake. So,
So it will be soon enough.
We'll
get through this. I've always said that the comeback is stronger than the setback.
There you go.
And such will be the case for all of us.
Absolutely. Dave, best of luck. Good luck. Boston has already been assigned and sold out for a live event, but it's still open for the virtual. Is that
the
status? Correct. Okay, great. And for more information, people can go to, is it BAA.org, I believe?
Yeah.
Awesome. For more information about the Boston Marathon, Dave McGillivray joining us, the race director and good friend from the racing community and race industry. Wishing you all the best, my friend.
Thanks, Chris. You take care.
You too. All the best.
Bye.
It's always great to have him on. He's always got some great insight about the industry and especially what's going on right now around the United States. And I really welcome him anytime he can come on. And I miss our talks. You know what? Just before we go, I just want to talk really briefly about Canada Day. It is open. Go to runningflat.com. It is virtual. We'll send you the shirt, the medal, the bib. And we've even been talking about packing something into people who live in Ontario only. And who knows, maybe there's even a butter tart involved. And the medal this year, of course, is the stethoscope on the medal, on the architecture that we usually have. And, you know, without further ado, guys, this has been Running Flat Radio for this week. I'm Chris Uzinski. For more information, go to runningflat.com. And most of all, keep running.